Hello, I'm Linor Mudu. Welcome to Health Chat. October is Breast Cancer Awareness Month. It is a diagnosis many women fear. Breast cancer is a disease in which cells grow out of control. The cancer is often undetectable in its early stages. The World Health Organization says breast cancer most commonly presents as a painless lump or thickening in the breast. Other symptoms include changes to the skin over the breast, such as dimpling, swelling of all or part of the breast, and irritation of the breast. Breast cancer comes in many forms. According to Johns Hopkins Medicine, triple negative breast cancer accounts for about 10% to 20% of all breast cancer cases, and it is more aggressive and more likely to develop in Black women. Breast cancer can develop in both men and women, but it's far more common in women. Experts say there is a chance of 1 in 4 women developing breast cancer as opposed to 1 man out of 100. Global cancer data reveal a high mortality rate of breast cancer in Africa, and the reasons include lack of access to adequate treatment, myths and misconceptions about the disease, and late diagnosis. Here is a story narrated by VOA's Betty Ayub.
Breast cancer is the top cancer for women globally. Data from the World Cancer Research Fund International shows that there were more than 2.26 million new cases of breast cancer in women in 2020. Experts say at least 80% of people survive breast cancer in North America. In low-income countries, it is less than 50%. And Black women are more at risk. Dr. Beatrice Wiafe Adai is the president of Breast Care International, a Ghana-based not-for-profit breast cancer advocacy organization.
We do have a lot of triple-negative disease. The Black Americans also do have, but it's because we have the same roots.
Researchers have identified biological links between African ancestry and triple-negative breast cancer. Scientists say it is more aggressive and more likely to spread beyond the breast and to come back after treatment than other types of breast cancer. They say more research is needed on breast cancer among women of African descent so they can have better prevention and treatment options specific to their needs. Pathologist Dr. Kafui Akakpo works with Yamachi Biotech, a homegrown research and diagnostics startup.
If you look at every study across the world, there are very few of them who are Africans. So what this does is that you come to the African population and study it, and that has effects on African Americans and any other group that has a basis in Africa. That's why this is so important. Without it, you don't have enough to relate to African breast cancer. Most of it is actually in a white population and not in an African population.
Medical experts say age, obesity, inactivity, and alcohol use can increase the chances of developing breast cancer. And early detection and prompt action can increase the chances of survival.
Reports from Ghana show that about 70% of women who do not go to hospitals for early breast cancer tests lose their breasts or even die due to the disease. To reverse the trend, the organization Breast Care International has put together its annual cancer awareness walk. Here is a story by Hamza Adams, narrated by Trésor Matondo.
The march is held annually in October in different parts of Ghana. Thousands of people have gathered this year in Tepa in the Ahafo-Hano North District to raise awareness about breast cancer. It is the 10th edition for Breast Care International. The organizer of the event under the name Breast Cancer Won't Rest So What Should We, Dr. Beatrice Weyafe Adai, is the president of Breast Care International.
Our daughters, our friends, are dying needlessly from this disease.
Medical experts say late detection of breast cancer is one key reason for high mortality rates in Ghana in particular and Africa as a whole.
When a woman notices a lump in her breast, but because the lump does not cause her any pain, she thinks there's no need to act to go to the hospital.
Breast Care International has called on donors to support the initiative.
We just want to entreat
other organizations, benevolent individuals, you know, philanthropists, to come on board and to support the needy breast cancer patients.
The Morocco Embassy in Ghana has pledged its support to continue the fight against breast cancer in the country.
We asked you, our listeners, how much do you know about cancer and if you are concerned about the disease? Here is what some of you have to say in Nigeria.
We always advise as women, we check ourselves medically, you know, from time to time. And you always check your breasts. And then the doctors will always check you from time to time. I do that from time to time because I'm aware that I am, you know, open to all this, you know, free radicals around me that can actually lead to that. So I don't joke with my health, and I do a lot of exercise.
Breast cancer in men, because I can remember back then in my hometown, there was a cousin of mine who had a swollen breast. Even up till now, I believe the stuff is still disturbing him. So definitely, men also had breast cancer as well.
No, I've not had it before. That is just the truth. I've not had it that men, you know, do have breast cancer. No. But why should men have breast cancer? You know, nobody is sucking it for them. Nobody, I mean, they don't breastfeed, you know, children. So I don't think that they should have such a ailment.
Let them take care of women as a breast cancer. Because breast cancer used to kill women now, but every day. It was last week that one of my sister, she died with breast cancer at Jujos. Even now, I guess some of my colleagues that they are suffering with breast cancer at Jujos. Yesterday, we were praying in our church concerning breast cancer. Say they need to take something and take care of women concerning breast cancer.
And because I think men also should be, you know, pay more attention to also. I think they need to check more on men as well, the way they also, you know, check women as same thing as well.
Being diagnosed with breast cancer can be scary. It is an experience Helewa Ubau Ali went through in 2019. Now cancer free, she has decided to share her experience.
Helewa Ali, thank you so much for joining us today.
My pleasure.
You are here because you survived breast cancer.
Yes.
You experienced breast cancer. A lot of times, I mean, all the time, when women hear you have breast cancer, it's a diagnosis no one wants to hear. Mm-hmm. Take us back to that moment. I mean, what was it like? What prompted you to maybe think about it, or did you even think about it?
That moment, it was very hard for me and even for my family. But I remember I was wake up, do my normal routine, go back to work, normal stuff. And my doctor called me, you know, Miss Ali, you need to come get your result. You know, so I went back there. My doctor sit down like this talking to me and hold my hands. You know, we got your result, Miss Ali, you diagnosed with breast cancer. I was like, what? No. That, because I could not believe it, because it was not, and we believe breast cancer run in the family. Mm-hmm. And as far as I know, nobody in my family, you know, had a breast cancer. So it was shock to me, shock to my friend and my family, you know. And but thank God, from there, I talked to myself and I have a lot of faith. I told God, I said, you know what? I know I can beat this. We can go ahead, start the treatment, you know. Then I went to see my oncologist. When I went to see him, he said, okay, Miss Ali, we're going to do mammogram one more time. We want to make sure what stage you are in and everything for your breast cancer. So we went back. We do mammogram. After that, you know, they find out it was stage 3. So we was like, okay, we're going to go ahead and do it. We start chemotherapy first. After chemotherapies, I do twice a week. I used to go twice a week, you know, for 2 months. After my chemotherapies, then I had to do surgery. You know, I did my surgery. You know, they put implant in. I remember it was February 2020, and the COVID started. And after my chemo, I couldn't go back to the hospital for 4 months. I was so scared, frustrated. I'm scared because I don't know what's gonna, it's gonna get worse. I used to call my oncologist every 5 minutes. I need to see the doctor. I'm scared. I'm here. I'd be like, Mr. Lee, you can't go to the doctor right now. You can't go to the hospital to do any surgery right now. We have to reschedule for another day. We don't know when. That's a scary moment. Wow. Imagine you already have a cancer. Then you have to, what about the COVID state? It was too much going on.
So when you look at what you went through, because you talk about chemotherapy, surgery, radiation and everything, what do you think has been enlightening for you as an African woman living in the United States with this whole issue of breast cancer? Because we hear a lot about breast cancer raising awareness in October, and in Africa, in our countries back home, women talk about it in October. But what did you learn in that journey?
This journey made me appreciate more the life, appreciate more the people be around me, you know, and to take care of myself. I have to come first. I used to run around, what about everybody? I'm the one that put myself in the last person. But this journey made me feel like I got to do me. I have to come first and take care of somebody else, you know, and take care of myself. When I say take care of myself, I mean take care of emotion and physical, because emotion is very important. You know, so
what is your message with breast cancer? Because not every patient wants to talk about it.
Yes.
And you decided to talk about it. Why is it important for you to share your journey?
Really, that's a good question, because, you know, especially we Africa, everything we just don't want to talk about. We put under the rug. Nobody wants to talk about this. Me, I even put my picture on my Instagram when I was bald head. You know, some people, they take a joke. Some people, they talk bad about me. You know, but for me, I feel like because me, it helped a lot when I see somebody went through about cancer, and I listen to them, I look online, I listen to them, what they go through, it helped me. And I know somebody else, they can look at me, now they can have a hope. They be like, you know what, she was stage 3 just like me, and now look at her, she stand up, you know, she's strong, she could beat it, and I can do it. It's going to help whoever watching me right now. You know, and those people who are sit there, you don't have to be worried about it. Have a faith and believe God, and you have a good doctors, you'll be fine. You'll be fine. If you need any help, somebody can call me. If you want somebody to go to the chemotherapy, you don't have anybody to help you, I'm willing to do it. Because me, thank God, I have my family and friends. They were there for me and helped me a lot. That's why I stand strong until now.
So What do you want women to know about this experience with breast cancer? Something that, you know, you just didn't imagine.
I know it's going to be shock for everyone, any woman, every man. Now they can get a breast cancer, first of all. Right. So the woman, you have to go to do exam every time you're supposed to do your exam. You have to check yourself. You know, don't see something, you be like, oh, nothing. No, you better check early than later, you know. So,
and one of the things you talk about is how you were persistent when initially doctors were telling you, oh, it's nothing.
Yeah.
Talk about the fact that you took charge of your own health and you pushed the envelope to find out.
Yeah, like I say, when I would go to my doctor, it's like, oh, this is nothing, this is normal. You know, just a tissue, but take ibuprofen, you're going to get better. I was like, okay, but you know yourself, something is not right. And I sit it for 2 days, I was like, no, I got to go see my other doctor. So thank God I called my other doctor. I got, you know, appointment after 2 days, I got appointment. So they sent me to do biopsy, and that's why I got my, and I said, and still, since they told me it was nothing from the beginning, and I know breast cancer doesn't run in my family, back in my head, I'd be like, okay, I know this is not breast cancer, but I just want to know what it is. So when they called me to give me my result, I was like, wait a minute, no way. This is not my result. Because first of all, from the beginning, y'all told me this is not breast cancer sign. So back in my head, I know it's not breast cancer, but I knew it was something. That's why I was pushing myself to go to see my other doctor. So it was really shocked to me and my whole family and friends.
So this took 2 years. When was the last treatment, and what do you do now for your health?
Yeah, okay. My last treatment, I think it was November or 2020, I think. Yeah, so I finished my radiation and did my surgeries. After that, I have to do my eat healthy. That's very important. You have to change your habit, what you're eating. That's very important what you put in your body, because before I didn't do it. So now I learn. I have to take care of myself, to go to do exercise, even for walk, 30 minutes walking. You know, eat healthy. You know, take care of yourself. You know, because you feel good inside, but you show you outside. You know, so it's such a big difference. Now I learned my lesson. It's like, you take me who I am or not, because I'm not bugging with nobody. It's me, what I went through. Nobody will understand. At least somebody went through what I went through.
So when you think about the sisters back home and you look at your experience, what does it tell you? What do you feel?
That's the scare. That's the really scare people from back home. Why? Now I start getting emotional because I have one of my friends, she's back home. She's younger than me. She told me, Ali, guess what? I couldn't make an appointment. If you call your doctor, ask for the appointment, you get after 3 months or 4 months, or you told the doctor, they told you the hospital is full right now. Could you imagine? You have a cancer, and then the hospital you call and they told you, you know, you can't go back to see your doctor because, you know, they have a lot of patients there. That's a scared moment. That's really scary moment. And I wish sometime I say we can make a difference, but hey.
So what is your final message?
My final message to my people is like, to be good for yourself and take care of yourself. And, you know, breast cancer is really not only for the family. Anybody can get breast cancer. Young, old, you can get twice. They just pray and be united together and help each other to make strong.
Helewa Ali, thank you so much. We appreciate
my
your time.
My pleasure. Thank you so much.
That was Helewa Ubao Ali sharing her experience of surviving breast cancer. You are listening to Health Chat on Voice of America. It is time for a short break. Don't go away. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Health Chat. Cameroon says a fresh wave of cholera outbreak following floods on its northern border with Chad and Nigeria has killed at least 17 people. After an emergency meeting of government officials and relief agencies on Wednesday, the government ordered the deployment of humanitarian workers to overcrowded hospitals, especially on the border with Nigeria. Moki Edwin Kinzeka reports from Yaoundé, Cameroon.
The camp, located on Cameroon's northern border, is home to 76,000 Nigerians who have fled Boko Haram terrorist attacks. Helen Go, spokesperson for UNHCR Cameroon, says the UN body needs support to contain the ongoing wave of infections and to prevent future outbreaks in the refugee camp.
In Minawao, specifically, UNHCR needs at least $450,000 to be able to increase potable water supply and also to be able to cover an existing gap of 900 latrines and to be able to improve waste management in the camp as well. All of these needs are extremely urgent at this point.
UNHCR says it is investigating suspected cases and treating patients free of charge. The refugee agency says it is also finding out if the disease has spread to host communities. Ngo said several hundred humanitarian workers have been deployed to the camp and host communities to educate refugees on prevention measures, which she said are basically respecting hygiene rules. Nigerian refugee Special Bulama is among aid workers raising awareness about the outbreak and teaching civilians good hygiene practices. Bulama says he has personally spoken about the disease to scores of families in the camp.
We are telling the refugees to take care of themselves. They must boil water before they take. They must wash their hands with sabulu, keep their latrine very safe because fly can take this disease to the food or to the water. We are telling them to help us to avoid this problem of cholera.
Cameroon's Ministry of Public Health has confirmed the outbreak. Government health officials say at least 22 people have died of cholera in several villages on Cameroon's northern border with Nigeria and Chad. Humanitarian workers and health officials say many more people may be infected or are feared dead in difficult-to-access villages within the past 2 weeks. The UN reports that up to October, more than 1,000 cases of cholera were reported in Nigeria. Cameroon says hospitals in border localities are overwhelmed. Officials in Cameroon say they are engaged in discussions with Nigeria and Chad to jointly combat cholera, a bacterial infection that causes severe diarrhea and dehydration, usually spread through contaminated water. It can be fatal if not treated. Moki Edwin Kinzuka for VOA News, Yaoundé, Cameroon.
The United Nations Refugee Agency, UNHCR, has urged for international support to combat the cholera outbreak among refugees in Cameroon. The UN Refugee Agency says up to $250,000 is needed to increase access to clean water, improve waste management in the camp, and address other urgent needs. I spoke to Olivier Beyer, UNHCR representative in Cameroon.
We responded quite fast to this outbreak of cholera with our partners, the government, of course, but also WHO and UNICEF and NGOs dealing with health in the refugee camp. So we managed to treat 53 out of 73 patients who are now back home. 40 patients last week, 73 this week. We hope now that figures will come down, but this is the situation as it is today. We have also disinfected 2,300 houses out of 3,500. So we are progressing with disinfection. We are progressing with bringing medication because there was a gap with regard to medication. And we are also disinfected public schools, public buildings where people are gathering. What we are doing also is to sensitize refugees about waste management and the importance of using latrines when we have them. Because another gap that we have a gap of 900 latrines. You know, Minawawa refugee camp was designed at the beginning for 20,000 refugees maximum. But we had 30,000 and now we are at 75,000. But with the same budget that we had 5 years ago with 30,000 refugees. So it's much more challenging for us to respond to the needs of refugees across the border, food, health, education, etc.
How do you get more funding? You talked about partners. How does this change?
What we are trying to do is to advocate for humanitarian funding because you know, refugees are here for quite some time, not only the Nigerian, but also the Central African. And it's very difficult to get humanitarian funding for protracted refugee situation. But it does not mean that refugees are already able to fully take care of themselves. Why? Because these regions where usually are refugees are remote areas where development is also missing.
WHO adapted its strategy because there is a shortage of vaccines against cholera, going from two doses to one dose. Isn't that counterproductive? And isn't there a risk of this outbreak even growing further? How efficacious is a one-dose vaccine?
To respond to cholera effectively, what I have seen, my experience, is that you need a series of things to happen. The numbers of latrine, the numbers of medication, the numbers of the availability of potable water, waste management, sensitization, entrance, catheters, all these things. So what we need to do is to make sure that everything will be addressed, will be responded to, and then you can afford to have one dose of vaccine. You have sufficient health personnel that we don't have for the moment. When you have all these things in place, then yes, you can maybe afford to have one dose.
So how optimistic are you when you look at the current map in terms of solving all these issues at the same time?
I'm more optimistic because I've seen that for this particular outbreak, we managed to work all together. So if we are developing leadership coordination and we have enough resources, I'm very optimistic that this can be not only solved and responded to, but prevented, because floods are happening every year. We know the problems. We know the context in which we are living. We can, today in 2022, in a country like Cameroon, we can avoid cholera.
Finally, Mr. Olivier Béard, what is your message?
My message, of course, goes first to the relatives of the refugees who lost their lives, because as a UNHCR representative, I really feel sorry for these families and for the refugees. But at the same time, my message is to call on the donors, on everyone assisting us. Of course, I thank already for the support that we are getting, but I want to say it's not enough. We need more. We count on the states, we count on the donors to help us more, because we don't want this to happen next year.
That was UNHCR representative in Cameroon, Olivier Béard. Turning now to Ebola, Ugandan officials have reported at least 11 more cases of Ebola in the capital since Friday, a worrisome increase in infections just over a month after an outbreak was declared in a remote part of the East African country. 9 more people in the Kampala metropolitan area tested positive for Ebola on Sunday, in addition to 2 others on Friday, Health Minister Jane Ruth Acheng said Monday. A top World Health Organization official in Africa said last week that Uganda's Ebola outbreak was, quote, rapidly evolving, describing a challenging situation for health workers. Fears that Ebola could spread far from the outbreak's epicenter compelled authorities to impose an ongoing lockdown, including nighttime curfews, on 2 of the 5 districts reporting Ebola cases. Health experts say the 9 new cases reported Monday follow a similar pattern, as they all are contacts of an Ebola-infected patient who traveled from an Ebola hotspot and sought treatment at Kampala's top public hospital, known as Mulago. That's all for this edition of Health Chat. For more health news and medical breakthroughs, visit voaafrica.com. Thank you all for joining us, and special thanks to all our affiliate stations throughout Africa for carrying Health Chat. I'm your host, Linor Mudu, in Washington, with producer Mukbil Yabaro. Until next time, take care, stay safe, and strive to make every day a healthy day.
Hello, this is Heidi Adams, host of Straight Talk Africa. Join me to explore what is now and what is next for African society, culture, and politics. We'll go behind the headlines to analyze the news and emerging trends shaping Africa today. Straight Talk Africa, every Wednesday at 18:30 UTC.
VOA brings you the best in African music on the African beat. African Beat showcases the latest and the greatest of contemporary African music, from bobo music to hip life, bongo flavor to soukous, Afrobeat to ndombolo, and makossa to kwaito. The African Beat on VOA has it all. And it's happening right here, Mondays through Fridays at 09:05 and 20:05 UTC, right after the international news.
Hello, this is Heather Maxwell, host of Music Time in Africa. Join me every Saturday and Sunday for an hour of awesome African music. Wake up, dance this music. Like to stay on top of new music trends, breakout artists, new releases? Maybe you just love the classic styles and artists of the past. Or simply the sound and feel of a good beat. Whatever your pleasure, you can get it every week right here on Music Time in Africa. So join me on your local FM station.